As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Hear That Podcast Growlin'. Paul Daner Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic coming to you as the draft has just wrapped here on Friday evening, day two, rounds two and three. One of the most important days of the offseason as the Bengals decided to take Path Chase on Thursday. And a lot happened.
Yes.
A lot happened, and we're going to kind of walk through. Let's do a quick recap walking through all of it, and then we'll start diving into a little bit of the analysis of it. Bengals saw a ton of offensive linemen in front of them at pick 38 when almost none were taken in front of them at the top of the second round, as we talked about, and we didn't see hardly any taken at the bottom of the first round. That run on offensive linemen, we wondered when it was going to happen. Well, it didn't happen until it got to around the Bengals pick. And so the Bengals said, let's do our primary move. Initiate our primary weapon. And that is what? Moving back in the second round. This team loves to do nothing more than to move back in the second round. So they did just that for the fourth time in the last 5 years. The only time they have not moved back in the second round in the last 5 years was when they had T. Higgins sitting in front of them at 33 last year and fielded calls all day and said, you know, T. Higgins is pretty good. We're just going to go with that. This is what they love to do, and they love to add picks because of it. So they move back from 38 to 46. New England comes up and gives them two of their fourth-round picks. So the Bengals end up with 46, 122, and 139. So two extra fourth-round picks and give up 38. So that ends up being about a wash right there when you're talking about the points being almost exactly the same. So the Bengals add two fourth round picks. They now have three fourth round picks and move back eight spots. You know, a move that you did in our two round beat writer mock draft, because It's a primary weapon of the Bengals. And if there were guys they felt like would be in the same universe later on, you can add picks. And they did that. You know, we can talk about that, but, you know, on its face, a fine move, totally understandable move, absolutely. But it's a matter of, okay, well, what are they going to end up missing out on? So you see a few of the offensive linemen do go off the board. Tevin Jenkins from Oklahoma State comes off the board. Liam Eichenberg, who I think a lot of us thought was a nice snug fit for the Bengals potentially there, goes off the board. Walker Little, the injury risk guy from Stanford who had all the measurables, but you got to go back to 2018 tape to watch him play because of injuries and other things. And so then the Bengals come up and they select Jackson Carman, who is from Fairfield High School and went to Clemson and protected Trevor Lawrence's blind side. And, you know, was a guy who, if you look at it, most had slotted Dane Brugler, had him back, had Carmen back at 92 overall on his big board. Daniel Jeremiah had him at 96 overall on his big board. He was at 73 overall on the consensus big board. PFF liked him the most and had him at 49, with the Bengals taking him at 46 overall. So the general thought out there, a round too early, a round and a half too early on Jaxon Carmen. That's their big move. They're going to bring him in. He's going to play guard with the potential to play tackle down the line. We've talked about that idea before, and that's the pick there. So the Bengals then go forward, and what do they need? The edge rusher spot is still there, true to form, bing, bang, boom. They knock out the edge rusher, and they go with Joseph Osai out of Texas. And so, you know, a guy who is a little more liked and actually was higher on most of these other big boards. Dane Brugler, in fact, had him at 47 overall on his big board. So you get these guys kind of flopped if you're looking at, if you're depending on what board you're looking at. PFF had him more at 60. Daniel Jeremiah hates both these picks. He had him at 88. Consensus had Osai at 42. High energy, high motor edge rusher out of Texas. No more picks happen, and the Bengals will go into the fourth round with three picks in the fourth round and a couple of sixes. So it's going to be a full Saturday. Jay, let's just jump into the Jaxon Carmen pick here that has that is the most controversial. That is one that we'll be talking about for a while. What is your first thought on the Carmen pick?
Yeah, two things. If you told someone that didn't watch the draft that today they got Joseph Osai and Jaxon Carmen, they would have probably said, yeah, that's a good haul for today. And then you tell them the order they got them, and then I think that's where the head scratching comes in. And when you talk about that trade back, everybody focuses on, you know, what you get, what the compensation is. And the bigger deal here is what they missed, because there were three tackles there that I think would have been good fits. But you wonder, because I've not seen anywhere where, like we talked about with Penei Sewell, they would bring him in and he would play guard his rookie year. You know, maybe they didn't view Eichenberg and Little and Jenkins as guys that would play guard. And so if you draft a guy, one of those three, then he's coming in as a second round pick as your swing tackle, and he may not play. Whereas now you get a guy that can play guard and tackle, and he's in the mix for a starting spot. So maybe that was it. Maybe that was the whole key, was the position versatility, and they wanted to get a guy that they thought that they could throw in there as a guard this year and have the potential. I mean, he played left tackle at Clemson, five-star recruit coming out of high school. It's weird that you would say, can he play tackle? But the consensus is he's a guard, and you know, there's a question whether he can ever play tackle. But even if he can't, if he's a starting guard for the next 4 or 5 years, whether they sign him into a second contract or not, he turns out being a pretty good pick.
If he is, yeah. I mean, if I think, you know, you're betting on development, you're betting on traits. You know, he's got your measurables that you want. He's got your position versatility. He's played well in big games. He's a guy that, you know, I think they view as an ascending player who started to really come on there especially towards the end. They like all the personality and leadership stuff. Everybody at Clemson swears by him and all that stuff. I mean, that's all fine and good. We will look back on this, like we will a lot, and talk about those guys, talk about really, and not just, you know, the three that you mentioned, but everybody that came after that. I mean, there's so many offensive linemen that people were picking through the warts of. You know, you have this draft is full. We talked about the depth of it. Yeah, there's a depth of it, but they're all still here in this position for a reason. And so
everyone is trying to decipher which warts they're comfortable with and why they are and how to value that. The other side of this is we don't know if it was necessarily going to be Carmen here or if maybe they were eyeing Carmen for the third round as a double up or even the fourth if he was around. And then maybe they got bumped in front of him. I mean, the trades that happened, it was a frenzy in the second round. And there were mad trades of people jumping in front of the Bengals once they moved back. So if the Bengals made that move back with a thought of, okay, some of the teams here, we don't think they're going to be taking offensive linemen or tackles. And then all of a sudden, trade in. Everybody jumps in to get their people. Well, that's a part of what happened, including the last one, Walker Little. And it makes you wonder, is that the guy? You know, you don't know. And but there was a lot of action there, and the Bengals end up going with somebody that I think most would agree was a reach, but it's their guy, and they're going to go with him, and he's going to come in, and I think in their ideal world, they're going to give him every opportunity to be your starting guard on opening day, protecting Joe Burrow, and so you Bengals fans need to get comfortable with that right now.
Yeah, and the thing is that all the reports on him is how athletic he is, and he's really going to be an asset in Frank Pollock's zone scheme. But you look at what Dane Brugler wrote in The Beast, and he wrote that he's a very good run blocker, and the question is, can he be a good pass protector? And that I think that's going to make everybody wince, where we know what position caused the Joe Burrow injury last year. Now you're putting a guy in there that is, number one, never played the position, never taken a snap at guard at any level outside of practice. So that's a concern. And yeah, he can be the greatest run blocker in the world, but it's, you know, can he pass protect? And again, you said it, he protected Trevor Lawrence's blind side for an elite program playing elite competition, not necessarily in the season, but they were in the college football playoff every year, won the national title 2 years ago. He went against Chase Young in that championship game. So it's just a different animal to go from, you know, blocking edge rushers to blocking bigger, stronger guys inside. I think there's a little bit of uneasiness because of what you said. It's a reach, but if this was their guy, and you get two extra fourth round picks out of it, the fourth round is where this team is really drafted well. It almost feels like a boom or bust kind of thing, where there may not be a middle ground. This is either going to look like a greatest move, or it's going to look like a terrible move.
I have two thoughts on, and I'm going to try to not be too long winded about these, and try to keep myself in a very calm space. Okay. Here's the first. I always go back to one of my favorite lines from The Big Lebowski that I use a lot when it covering the Bengals. This is our concern, dude. It's Philip Seymour Hoffman restating the obvious as Lebowski finally figures out what they're talking about. And this was it. When you went chase, when you push to this was why Team Sewell was strong with me, was you now are asking the Bengals to do something they have historically done poorly over and over and over again. And we don't know what Jackson Carmen is going to turn out to be. And that will be my second point that I'll get to in a second. But this certainly is ripe for criticism when we're talking about some of the other options that were potentially out there, and wondering how far they reached and what they could have done and could have still had this guy and another quality prospect there in the second round. Heck, you could have been taking a defensive player. You could have been taking an Onwuzurike or Barmore, who New England came up for, any number of the edge rushers that were up there at that point, and still made a play to get Carmen later. But the point is, this is why I felt like Team Sewell deserved more red. Not that Ja'Marr Chase in that path, if executed correctly and all goes well and falls perfectly into place, wasn't right. It's that this could happen. Is that we're sitting here talking about opening day Joe Burrow and his scarred knee being protected potentially by somebody who's never played guard before, who had a bulging disc that he played through last year and had surgery in January that everybody's supposedly he's going to be okay from, but he's got a back issue left from last year. I mean, and most people had in the 90s. And that is our concern, dude. And it was that you would end up in this spot now. And then this is your guy, right? And that, and it may work out well. And it may turn out that Frank Pollock and Duke Tobin and Zach Taylor and this whole evaluation crew did get it right. And they saw the traits and they saw the move inside was going to be perfect to get it out of them. And they hit it, right? Maybe that will happen. I hope for their sake it does. But this is open to heavy criticism and they are staking a massive chip on it. This is one you could not botch if you were going to go this way. And it's fair to wonder if they did. We don't know. We just don't know. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
My second point. Actually, I'll save my second point for a second. Jay, you jump in on that.
Well, what I want to say is, The weird thing about this is how this has developed into their signature move, because I've got a good comp here. Trading back, the Bengals trading back in the second round is Arby's, because I love it. I keep going back to it, and everybody's like, "Why?" That's what this is with the thing. They're why? Because you look at what they've done, they've done well enough. You know, they traded back and they got Joe Mixon, and they traded back and they got Jesse Bates. So that's great. That part of it's great. But when you look what they've done with the compensation, Malik Jefferson, Ronnell Wren, I mean, it's just Josh Malone. They have not taken advantage of these extra picks that they've gotten. And so it's just curious. What makes this a move that they're so in love with? It's great on the surface. Maybe they're playing the law of averages and saying, one of these years we're going to get it right, and we're going to get the guy we want moving back in the second round, and we're going to get the extra picks right. But they haven't done it yet.
The one aspect of that is I do think that the flexibility that extra picks gives you, it's the whole point. Multiple swings is the point. Mm-hmm. Is that, yeah, it's like when people would argue with me about comp picks, because the actual physical comp picks themselves weren't great. But if the other fifth round pick was great, that's not affected by comp picks. No, the freedom that multiple picks late in drafts gives you, like the freedom they're going to feel in the fourth round on Saturday, is the freedom to kind of do whatever you want and to get those multiple swings at singular positions. So even if that doesn't find itself the pick, the traded for pick hits, but if another one that allowed you to feel freer to take a flyer on whoever, you know, we'll talk about these guys later, Michael Carter or Kenneth Gainwell or something like that at running back, because you don't feel pressure right then to go in an offensive line because you know you've got that next pick sitting there. I think that's part of this success and just the enjoyment of having that quantity at that point. And I do think over time quantity has proven itself. Don't think that you're a better drafter than anybody else. Most people end up being the same drafters. The teams that understand that enough and allow the quantity to help them out is where they win. And I do think there's something to that. Even if the actual picks have not hit themselves. It's put them in an advantageous situation. But this brings me to my second point, because I feel like I'm in a time warp right now talking about the last time they did this and it didn't go well. And that was the Drew Sample trade back. Mm-hmm. This is that draft all over again. And it is, they moved back. They wanted Sample. They had their eyes on Sample the whole time, you know, supposedly. And they go back and they add the pick later and it's a reach, right? And most people had him around later. Bengals fans commence to destroy this kid.
Yep.
Drew Sample, who still hears it every time he does anything, even if he's proven to be a fine second tight end and whatever. It's not his fault that a team reached for him in the second round because they liked his character, they liked the way he played, they liked his fit, whatever. It's everybody in big draft media told me that this guy sucks because, or not that he sucks, that he should have been a third round pick instead of a second round pick. So I'm going to destroy him and talk about how much he sucks all the, and his draft position every time he's ever on the field. It's unfair to the kid. He will never win. He's already lost with fans, you know, and it's happened again. It happened again tonight. It's happening again at Jackson Carmen. And he may prove to be very good. And for his sake, I hope he is. And a lot of people that filled up vitriol into the abyss tonight have to eat their words on that, just for that sake. But it's disgusting, man, the way people unload crap on a kid who's just getting to live his dream out because you think the team reached for him. And maybe they did, but too often it goes after the kid. This kid sucks. You suck. And he's going to be treated and felt that way the same way Drew Sample has been the next few years. And I'm going to hop off my soapbox on that. But I just, like, it irks me. And people have their right to be frustrated with the Bengals. You should be. If you had higher expectations for that pick and you feel like they screwed it up, like, absolutely. But the way it goes down, where it's just giving this kid no shot and just going in on him, man, I hate how that happens. I hate how that happens, and it's happening again.
I agree. I hate it too, and I especially hate it because Drew is such a good guy. But I think this one's a little different for a couple reasons. Number one, the Drew Sample one, I think everybody was kind of like, it came out of left field that they went for a tight end there. I don't think anyone was expecting them to go tight end. So just the fact that they went off script position-wise, at least this is, everybody knew they had to go O-line and they went O-line, and maybe it wasn't the guy that they were expecting, but it was still a need that they had to fill, and it made sense position-wise. The other thing is, with Jackson Carmen being a local guy, you wonder if he catches a break there and people are more behind him because he is a local kid. I don't know. There's a lot of Bengal fans, obviously, that are overseas and they live in different parts of the country, but the vast majority are right here in Cincinnati. And I think they're going to want to root for a local kid. And I think those two reasons will make this a little bit different situation, a little bit better situation for Jackson Carmen.
We'll see. I hope so, for his sake. I mean, we met him tonight a little bit. Seems like a very affable guy. Proud, mm-hmm. proud Fairfield High School grad.
That's right.
Yeah.
Go Indians.
Yeah, he did. he did spurn the Buckeyes to go to Clemson. So I don't know if the Ohio State people don't like that, but seems like a very. I mean, he's in his house. He's got all his family and they go nuts because he's staying there. And he's talking about how this is an absolute dream come true and all that stuff. And, you know, you're happy for, you got it. You're happy for a kid if you see him in that moment and understand what this means to him and to be able to play here at home in front of his family, even if he never gave a hoot about the Bengals growing up. Like, that's fine. Like, it's just, it's cool for him. And I hate that there's like this negativity surrounding this kid who, you know, is just having the greatest moment of his life.
As soon as they drafted him, I had this immediate regret, and this was just bad of me. So Sunday, I meet a friend for beers Sunday afternoon at a bar that here in Fairfield that we go to from time to time, and my friend smokes. So we go out on the patio so he can smoke a cigarette, and Jason Krause, Jackson Carmen's high school coach, is sitting out there with his wife. And I know him. I did a story last year. Another Fairfield kid got drafted. And so I sat down with Jason. I know Jason. I've known his dad from covering high schools all those years ago. I said hello, and I left it at that because my friend was right in the middle of a story as we walked out there. And I should have stopped by the table and just been like, hey, how interested are the Bengals in Jackson Carmen? How have they been calling you to vet him? Just to kind of get a gauge of what their interest was. It's one of those we second guess the front office all the time. We second guess the players. I'm second guessing myself for that one. I could have maybe got a little insight there, and I let it go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but when your buddy's telling a good story,
it wasn't a good story. He was just talking.
It was an okay story. Oh, for an okay story, it needed to be at least it was a good story. You know, something about, you know, maybe throwing 2 liters at cops or something.
No, nothing. Nothing, you know,
something
that
crazy
gripping.
Like that. Totally.
No,
fictional.
No.
Yeah. So that's kind of, I guess that's where we're at with what happened with Jackson Carmen. Let's move to Osai real quick. I like this pick.
I do.
Here's the words that you hear spilled about him everywhere you look. We had a story, our writer at Texas, wrote about him, and you open the story and start reading, and it's all about the kid with the relentless motor, and just, it's not just you know, good, not just great. It is phenomenal in that it's just, you just don't see guys that play like this with just their hair on fire, just going hard all the time. And that is kind of what has made him. And he is a freak athlete. Freak athlete. The relative athletic score on him is like, by the explosion aspect, off the charts. Like, he's 256 pounds with a 42 vert and like 11 broad. I mean, it's stuff that's not really been seen much at that height and weight at any position. And so he's got all this physical skills. He's got this insane drive. He's a little stiff going around the corner, so his lateral movement isn't super, and his bend isn't as good as you maybe like it to be, which is how you get somebody with that kind of work ethic and this kind of explosion in the third round. But he's very raw in that they just kind of started getting him back to playing edge just this past year, and he started really taking off. Had a crap load of TFLs. He led the Big 12 in that. He led Texas in sacks. He's a really interesting person, you know, getting to know his backstory a little bit and talking to him a little bit tonight. Outgoing guy. He's got some charisma to him. I like this pick, and it hits him right where they need it. He just reeks of Carl Lawson, right? Like, it's just a rotational pass rusher going to come in, a freak athlete with maybe some things you don't like it, but people are like, man, this guy can really play. Coming in that rotational role, not a lot of pressure on him immediately to be the guy. And it does seem a pretty snug fit for what they're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, all the mocks that we did, he was always sitting there at 38, and it was always tempting. You're thinking this guy could be a fit. And again, if you flip him and they take him in the second round of Jackson Carmen in the third, you're saying that's a good second day. The thing you talked about, the story mentioned in his motor, it also mentioned he hit 20 miles an hour in practice, you know, with the GPS trackers. I mean, we kind of saw that in the Zoom, that motor was on display. It was charisma, but he was into it. He was loving talking to the media and really having fun, joking around. Ben Baby asked him about that, or told him, "Are you aware there's no Whataburger in Cincinnati?" And he kind of, you know, feigned the what? Like, maybe I don't want to go there. I mean, it was just he had a lot of fun with the interview. He's fired up. He can't wait to get here. And I think it's going to be interesting to see when he does. He may have the largest cheering section in the stadium among players, because he talked. That's the reason he stayed at Texas. He had offers. UC was actually his first offer, and he had one at Notre Dame, and he didn't want to go that far away from home because he wanted his family to be able to see him play. And the schools, he asked the schools what they could do to get his family there. And like, well, we can get him tickets, but it's up to you to get him here. And now he's making money. And I think he's going to have that whole extended family coming up to these games. I love the pick. It was a need. And if Jackson Carmen was a reach, Joseph Osai seems like a steal. I really did not expect him to be there in the third round.
Yeah. The interesting backstory. So he's from Nigeria. Him and his family are from Nigeria. They won a lottery in Nigeria to come. This is because Dane Brugler is incredible. Like, this is just, you just read, like, he's got all this on everybody, but they won a lottery in Nigeria to come over and be American citizens, come and have residence. And so him and he has five siblings and these three younger brothers, they come over and all start making their way and making names for himself. And he discovers football. He'd never known anything about it, the game at all, until he basically got over here and takes to it and becomes this great football player, and then tried to make his brothers fall on his path. And lo and behold, two of his brothers are playing in college football now because he wanted to kind of expose them to that world. And it's just, you know, there's just a lot to like about the kid, and a nice, I think a very nice third round pick there for the Bengals. Here's an interesting side note before we dive into a look at Saturday's picks. Were the Bengals too need heavy? I mean, they went to the T. Like, we have talked about this as like, going chalk in this draft was going to be receiver, line, edge, just like, yeah, check their three boxes off that they have, right? Those are the open spots on the roster. Those are the spots you need to fill. And were they so focused on checking those boxes, they forgot about the need to go BPA too, you know, and have a little bit of flexibility? I wonder, and that's probably mostly about the Carmen pick, you know, where, right, should at that point, should they, when you're talking about that, should you be talking more about some of the defensive linemen that were on the board there? Because there were plenty and there were different directions that you could go. And to do that there, I wonder if they put themselves in a box too much. I don't know. That's speculation. That's me just off the top of my head, but there was a lot of things you could have done there. I mean, the idea that you could have gotten one of the only two real defensive tackles in this draft. I mean, maybe they didn't like him as much, but the idea that you could have gotten one of the two of them if you didn't trade out is an interesting thought, because I don't think people really thought that you'd have a shot at somebody, at guys like that. But, you know, neither here nor there at this point.
Even after trading out, they had a shot at some guys. I'm not even going to – the Notre Dame linebacker, I'm not even going to try to say his name.
No, right.
Yeah. Ojulari was there, still there too,
right,
when they, yeah, took Carmen. But I do think they took BPA with Chase and with Osai. So, yes, it comes down if we're talking about were they too need-based, it comes down to the Carmen pick. And I think – you can argue whether he was the right guy or not, but it was, they had to. After they took Chase in the first round, we talked about it last night. They would have got killed if they passed on an offensive lineman in the second round. They had to take one there. You never want to draft for need, but they had to take someone there. You can argue with who it was, but I don't think they were overly reliant on need just because Chase and Osai, yeah, they were needs, but they also fit the BPA.
No, you're right. I mean, you had to take somebody. You know, you just wonder if that's the right somebody, and that opens up to thinking about other things. But so it goes. All right, let's just take a quick break. On to Sunday. Let's talk real quick about what to expect on Saturday. I'm on to Sunday in my head.
Yeah, I would love to be on to Sunday.
if only. Oh, my God. That's where I'm at right now. It's 12:49 in the a.m. as I'm speaking right now into this microphone. So
we still have stories to write.
Yeah. I know. So let's just real quick go down what I think you're going to see them look for now with these extra three, you know, now having the 3 4th rounders, the fifth and the 2 6s and the seven. I mean, you've got a lot of action on this day and a lot of different boxes you can check for some hope for guys. I think this means we'll see a kicker now, not in the 4th round, but I think this means that with that 7th or one of those 2 6s, I think they probably, with the extra pick, allows them to get the flyer on the kicker they really want. I think it definitely puts running back in the 4th round in play. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the one thing where I was like, well, how are you going to do all that? You want to get the Geo replacement, but good God, you need to be taking a double swings here at the offensive line. It's in the defensive line at some point. And then if you get to the 5th, is it even worth it? Right. And we talked about that, how in the 4th, they'd love to do that. But well, now I think this allows that. And lo and behold, Michael Carter, North Carolina, Kenneth Gainwell of Memphis are both sitting there. Dane has a 68 overall draft board number on Gainwell. And a lot of people love Carter even more than Gainwell. These are really good receiving running backs. And those are just a couple of actually multiple that are really there. I got to tell you, I'd be stunned if they didn't use one of these 3 4th round picks on one of these receiving running backs that's there. And maybe the first one.
I think it will be the first one. It goes to need, but you're probably going to have, I would assume another one's going to be an offensive lineman, but you're going to get a better quality player if you go for one of those running backs first. And I know it was early in the process, but from the people with the team that I talked to at the Senior Bowl, they do really like Michael Carter. They like everything. You said it, the pass catching ability, the guy, the fact that he was a split carry back in college, so he doesn't have the wear and tear, and Gainwell too. But I could see them going either one of those guys. And the thing is, you would maybe like those picks to be a little more bunched, because what are they? They're 111, 122, and 139. So it's a pick, then 11 later, a pick, and then 17 later, another pick. So those are kind of spread out. You would like to have kind of that double up they had that year with Malik Jackson and Sam Hubbard being back to back. But I think one's an offensive lineman, one's a running back, and then maybe the other one is BPA. Maybe they take a flyer on a tight end. Maybe they go O-line again. Maybe they go 3 offensive linemen if they're not. It sounds weird, but if they're not totally sold on Jackson Carman, who they took in the 2nd round, but there are questions playing a new position, the back, it wouldn't necessarily be a ding on their confidence. It's just covering your bases. But I could see a scenario where 2 of the 3 are offensive linemen.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think, you know, there's the defensive line. There's some intriguing defensive tackles. Davion Nixon is a really intriguing name to keep an eye on here, because you're taking a bit of a flyer on a guy who had knocks for maturity and issues going through community college. But I remember reading a great story about him and how he really came of age and found some maturity in his last year. And there's a lot of hope that he's kind of worked through some of that stuff. But as a physically gifted player, he's got a lot of tools. And you know, that's a position they need. I don't want to have to keep talking about how they love 4th round defensive linemen and how it has worked out a whole lot over the years. way back through the years, including the 2006 story that you talked about, involved a fourth round pick named Domantas Peko. You know, they took Geno Atkins, they took Carl Lawson in the fourth round. They've gone this direction before, and you know, in the year when they're trying to replace AJ Green, they take a receiver fifth overall. In the year when they're trying to replace Geno Atkins, do they take an interior defensive lineman in the fourth round? I mean,
makes sense.
Very real possibility, and it would make sense. It would have nice symmetry to it. I feel like the Bengals do enjoy good symmetry. So Davion Nixon, Marvin Wilson is a guy that Marion Hobby worked out down at Florida State. So potentially if you're looking for somebody there that could be in the mix, not necessarily in the fourth round, maybe later on, but keep an eye on him as the day unfolds. And we've got the Pittsburgh edges sitting out there. Rashad Weaver is out there. Cameron Sample from Tulane, a guy a lot of people like, is sitting out there. So there's defensive linemen on the table I think you could go to. I mean, to me, if I'm betting, what maybe the chalk again would be some combination of running back, O-line, defensive line. Let's talk about the offensive line, guys. Any that stand out to you of the offensive line? I've got a few in front of me here. One is local, if we're going to do the local thing, right? James Hudson.
Hudson, yeah.
He's out there. And
a lot of people, you know, thought he'd be gone by now.
Right, and I'm sure he thought he would be gone by now, and maybe you get a guy who can be a little motivated by that. They certainly should have pretty good intel at UC. With Zach Taylor and with being right down the road. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's some of their backyards butt up against each other. So I think that could be somebody. Trey Smith is a really interesting person who has just physical tools upon physical tools from Tennessee, plays guard, but didn't quite put it together down there. But it's like, man, if you could get this guy to put it together, he could really be something. So those are a few. Stone Forsyth from Florida is a guy that I know some of the scouts are pretty high on. It's not Bengals scouts, but, you know, the offensive line scouts that do exist out there that you see high up on some of these boards.
I like Trey Smith, but I start to wonder if they get too lopsided with interior guys versus tackles. Because yes, Jackson Carman maybe can be a tackle down the road, but he's a guard this year. And they still need a true tackle, I think, to be. Carman can be the swing tackle if somebody gets hurt, but that's not ideal. Then you're moving him out to tackle, and then you're putting somebody else in at guard. I think Hudson would make the most sense. He's the best tackle remaining, the local connection. It feels like best player they would go running back first, but if they are intent on getting a true tackle, Hudson might be the only one that's worthy of a fourth round pick there. It really kind of drops off after that. It's getting pretty thin in the tackle class.
If they are intent on getting a tackle, they should have used a pick on a tackle back in the second round, because it's not getting thin. It's thinned.
Yes.
It's that you're not finding real tackles at this point. Certainly nobody that's going to help you this year. Michael Carter or Kenneth Gainwell help you this year. Mm-hmm. They help you immediately. They give you that third down chain. They give you explosion. Kenneth Gainwell, think Antonio Gibson, who you saw in Washington, same school, same style, same player-ish, you know, same type of guy. And Gibson had such a huge impact for Washington football team. Michael Carter, think Giovanni Bernard, same school, same style, same type of deal. He's not Giovanni Bernard, but think, you know, there are a lot of similarities there. You know, so you can be getting something really good there. That can help you this year. So if you're delineating between 111 and 122, I mean, how many of those offenses, is there going to be a run on these offensive linemen? I don't think so. I mean, I think there's whoever it is, they're probably going to be there when you pick it, either one, who knows. But I like the immediacy of what you can even get with the running back. If and 11 picks later, take the whatever the offensive lineman that you like.
Yeah, and maybe if one of those running backs goes before 111, then what you talked about before with the flexibility with the extra picks, maybe they package the last pick in the fourth and or a six or something, like put together something to move up and make sure they get the other guy, whether Gainwell goes first and you get Carter or vice versa. But I'm not sold that they're done dealing. I mean, I could see that happening if there's a guy that they really want. They've got the capital to do that now, to move back up a few spots. We've seen them do that in the past, move down and then turn around and move up in the fourth. Did it for Michael Jordan, did it for Ryan Finley. So that I don't think that's out of the question at all.
Boy, you know how to sell a tactic, Jay. Did it for Michael Jordan and Ryan Finley.
Law of averages. Got to work this time.
Third time's the charm. But, you know, if there is, you know, because they really, you know, I think what they had pretty clearly had their eyes on edge rusher there in the third. They haven't really, you know, there could have been a lineman that they had a very, very, very nice grade on that has just sat around that other teams maybe haven't seen as well, that's been sitting there and they can't believe it. And maybe they do push up to try to make something like that happen. Yeah, I agree with you. There's definitely a chance they could go for that. We shall see. Maybe they throw a linebacker in and tight end. I mean, there could be some odds and ends here at the end, but I think the fourth round is going to be the one to watch for them trying to check off a few more boxes they really want to check off and doubling up on that offensive line for sure. So, all right, Jay, we've got stories to write and not sleep to get.
Yeah, it starts in 11 hours again.
We'll be right back at it. We'll be coming in hot. So everybody, make sure you go to theathletic.com and check out all of our coverage from draft weekend. It's so cool to see all the college stories just show up as soon as a guy is picked. So if you want the true deep written story on whoever the Bengals just picked, boom, they pick them and there it is. There's the Osai story from Texas, and we've got stories on Carmen. We got all this stuff that's already out. It's great. And all of that has come together. It's been a lot of fun to watch. It's all up there on the site right now. And there are subscription, big time subscription deals happening on our stories right now. If you just go to click on the link and it'll show up and you can get a really good deal. So highly recommend that, or just go to theathletic.com/hearthatpodcastgrowling and you can subscribe there. So, all right. Thanks everybody for listening. We will talk to you when the draft wraps on Saturday night. So have a good one, everybody.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.